Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Have you ever wondered about the backstory of professional football in the mile-high city of Denver? Well, pull up a chair and adjust your headsets, because we're going to higher altitudes with the origin of the Denver Broncos and their story and owner and founders coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we're going to look back in that portal today and look at one of the more modern teams that you recognize today, a team from Denver, Colorado. Yes, the Denver Broncos. The NFL franchise is quite popular in story over the last half a century or more. You know, the legendary era of John Elway leading the team to 5 Super Bowl appearances and leaving for retirement as he hoisted the Lombardi a second consecutive time. It was quite a storybook ending of a great career of a great quarterback. But another brilliant era of Bronco football was the late 1970s with the gritty Orange Crush defense and Craig Morton at quarterback at the tail end of his career. Or more recently, how about Peyton Manning after he was traded to Denver, where they again captured Super Bowl glory? Now, these are fascinating stories in themselves. But in this segment, I want to place those for another day and learn the origin of the Denver Broncos franchise. One source that we will look and use in this endeavor is the fantastic book titled Tales from the Denver Broncos Sideline, a collection of the greatest Broncos stories ever told, compiled by author Andrew Mason. Make sure you find that at Amazon. We have a link to that on Pigskin Dispatch for this Denver Broncos article that we have coming out. Now, Mason points out to a movement in the late 1950s of American cities on the rise, trying to obtain sports teams to help quench their citizens' thirst for representation in professional athletics. The rise of the Continental League in baseball, started by the New York tycoon William Shea in an effort to start a replacement for the MLB National League teams of the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants, who departed the Big Apple for greener pastures in California. Well, Shea, who was also the man who Shea Stadium was named for, forced the hand of the MLB to expand and add franchises in areas like Houston and the move of the Washington Senators squad to Minnesota to become the Twins. Now, they did promise places, you know, like Denver and some others that maybe they'll get some teams eventually, but they had to wait. They also allowed Shea, that is the MLB, to have a team, eventually the Mets, to help quench any competition from an upstart league, and it worked. The Continental League folded. However, that was Denver's shot to have a Major League Baseball team have professional sports. But there were more cities, like, for instance, Denver, that had populated centers but did not have a team that played on their confines to root for. Now, Denver was having the same success at the AAA level of baseball, and the city started gearing for a possible continental team by making plans to expand their multi-use stadium, which seated, you know, less than 5,000. Now, they figured if they could get a chance at a football franchise in the Mile High City, they could make it even bigger than the 8,000 seats that they had planned for the baseball team. Now, that Continental League folding with the MLB sweetening the pot and getting, you know, Mr. Shea out of the contention of starting that league, well, that caused a little bit of an obstacle for them. But in stepped, you know, Bob Housum, that was the owner of that hardball team called the Denver Bears, and he was soon approached by a man named Lamar Hunt, who was forming a new football league that would fill the same gaps that the Continental League was filling in a neglected fan base of baseball cities. Only he was doing it in football, where the NFL wouldn't go. So So Hunt's league was the AFL. And you can learn more about Lamar Hunt's story and the start of the AFL in our post and interview with author John Eisenberg, who wrote a fantastic book centered around a lot of this subject called The 10-Gallon War. Make sure you check that out and check out the podcast that John was on so graciously talking about the book and the story. Now, Hausman, despite the uphill battle of possibly making money on such a venture as, this baseball team and maybe a football team in the AFL, well, he did finally invest. And in August of 1959, the founding owners of the American Football League met to form that league. And, well, at least a third such football organization that had the American Football League. Remember, there was some back in the 1920s when Red Grange and C.C. Pyle formed a league. And then there was another one soon after that in the early 30s of the AFL. Back in the Mile High City, when Hausman got together with the rest of the executives, well, they decided to choose the moniker of the Broncos, reviving a minor league baseball team name from the early, nearly 40 years earlier. And the DenverBroncos.com website sheds further light on the subject, stating that, quote, "The Broncos was a nickname selected out of a statewide contest by Bob Hausman, the original owner of the American Football League franchise, with the help of a group of prominent citizens as judges," end quote. Now, Joseph Sanchez wrote that in the Denver Post in 1995. He added, quote, "Eight entrants submitted a name, but Ward M. Vining of Lakewood was declared the official winner of the contest based on his 25-word essay explaining why it would best fit a football team based in Denver," unquote. So there you have a couple different reasons. We had an old baseball team, minor league baseball team named the Broncos. You had this contest where these judges chose the winner from a 25-word essay. It's kind of hard to write that much in 25 words. That's not very many. So that's pretty substantial that Mr. Ward M. Vining did to have such an impact to get it named the Broncos. Well, the name, anyway, was fitting for the Wild West heritage and image of the city of Denver, as a Bronco was a tough and always bucking and fighting horse, befitting of the city and its people living in the high altitude of the Rocky Mountains. Well, this group of the Broncos, they got right to work, signing 34 players before they even hired their first general manager of the franchise, who happened to be Dean Griffin. Now, Griffin was a former CFL executive, and he called up people named Frank that he worked with north of the border to help make the Broncos competitive early. Now, that was the hope, anyway. First of all, he hired Frank Trepuka, the former Saskatchewan Roughriders quarterback that appeared to have been retired from the CFL. However, with a chance to play pro football in the States, well, he suddenly had a desire to play once more. The Roughriders' former coach Frank Filchok was the other Frank, and he was hired as the Broncos' first sideline boss. Now, one of the first players inked that had come out of college was 1959 Heisman Trophy winner Billy Cannon. Now, the Broncos really broke the bank on this one, offering more than $60,000 more than the best offer of the Los Angeles Rams of the NFL's offer of $50,000. So $110,000 the offer, which was off the charts back in 1960. And after that, everything was on a tight budget because they sort of spent their wad right there. Now, the uniforms were the least expensive that Bob Hausman could find. They were a color of brown and sort of a mustard yellow, very hideous from what was described in everything that I've read. Now, quarterback Frank Trepuka once said that they were the ugliest looking things, unquote, that he ever saw. Now, those colors were horrid together, but just imagine when you combine those two colors of the pants and uniform with some vertically striped socks of equal ill colors for every player on the squad. Well, there was nearly 120 players brought into camp. And with this tight bunch, they sifted through the bunch and finally found their roster. A lot of the credit of budgeting players' pay to fit the financial constraints does go to Hausman, who about a decade later would use the same skill set to forge together the big red machine of the Cincinnati Reds Major League Baseball team. Now, Hausman ended up selling the Broncos after the first season and then moved on to go into Cincinnati eventually with the Reds. Now, the Broncos never had a winning record in the AFL, with their final season of 1969 being the best of the bunch at a record of 5-8. but they did have some success, though, with some milestones in the upstart league. As a matter of fact, the Broncos won the first ever AFL game, a win over the Boston Patriots 13-10 on September 9, 1960. Almost 7 years later to the day, on August 5, 1967, they also became the first ever American Football League team to defeat a National Football League team with a 13-7 win over the Detroit Lions in a preseason exhibition tilt. Now, more than six decades after the AFL formed, the AFC West is still the only division of football that has the same four franchises that it began with back in 1960. Along with the Broncos, the Raiders, Chargers, and Chiefs, who actually started out as the Dallas Texans in 1960, well, these four franchises have rivaled each other all this time for, you know, 60-some years. And out of them, only the Broncos are in the same town without ever leaving. Of course, Oakland went to L.A., back to Oakland, now they're in Las Vegas. You know, the Chargers, Los Angeles, to San Diego, back to Los Angeles. The Chiefs started off in Dallas, like we said, now in Kansas City. So just unbelievable that that foundational roots that Bob Housem and others set in, you know, the city of Denver with the Denver Broncos team of the AFL, and not having very good success for 10 years and Housem, you know, leaving them after a year. Well, it's unbelievable the success that they had, you know, starting in the 70s, working a little bit in the 80s. The 90s were great, and so were the, you know, the new millennium, some great years. And they're planning on some big things to come here with signing another outstanding quarterback in Russell Wilson. We'll see how that goes for the 2022 season and beyond. But Denver, definitely a city that wants to win football, and no matter who owns it, who quarterbacks, who coaches it, they're always competitive and always ready to have a great game. So we're glad you joined us here for this little bit of history on the Denver Broncos. We hope that you'll join us each and every day, and maybe one day real soon we'll talk about the origins and some stories from your team as well. But don't let that fool you. We got some great things on all the other teams and some of the defunct teams in all levels of football, professional, college, high school. And we'll talk about the younger leagues too if we can find some great stories. So if you have any feedback you'd like to leave with us, or maybe a story that you'd like to hear, please contact us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd be love to hear from you, and we'll answer each and every email from our listeners as we always do. So till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.